Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Welcome to the Fireside Chat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Paul Spohr and Nick Pollack.
What is happening? Welcome to the Fireside Chat. My name is Nick Pollack, and joining me, as always, in his lovely, lovely wool hat, Paul Spohr. Hi, Paul.
Nick, how's it going, man? Great to
Fantastic.
Talk to you.
Can you tell us more about this hat?
It's real cozy. Ski cap, you know, wearing a beanie in July, maybe not the best idea, but when we keep it so, listen, I talked about this in a previous episode, we're very energy efficient during the fireside. We That's freeze true. Out the lair that we're in That's right. so that the fire, the robe, the beanies, it's all needed, right? Because by the outside weather, it's definitely not, but we make it a meat locker in here so that we can get nice and cozy by the fire. So it's just a pretty sweet Adidas beanie. It's really comfortable. It goes with the robe. Got the fuzzy slippers on, both of us do. A little hot chocolate going on our second cup here. And it's time to talk some pitching.
Absolutely. And, you know, I really do need to get the tassels, the balls yes. at the end for my hat in the future. But right, this is an exciting time because as Spohr does, he traditionally updates near the top of the month. He put his rankings out yesterday, I believe. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was today.
No, you're correct.
Same day as this guy. Mm-hmm. So this is the most convergent we have been as far as at this moment moving forward. And there really isn't too much, I think, that we disagree on. There are some guys that we have maybe 10 spots here and there. There are some that certainly stand out. But really, it is comforting at the very least that... For the most part, if you look at the whole spectrum of starting pitching, we aren't really showcasing in this comparison. These guys are way off on us. I mean, is there really one guy that, you know, as you go through mine, and we're going to be plodding through each tier by tier, but is there one instantly like, okay, this is the one we're going to circle to make sure that we really...
Between the two of us?
Yes.
You know, some of the guys that we have our big disagreements on, I get. You know, you might need to put me on a little bit and calm me down on my boy John Gray, because it is a pretty steep disagreement. And I do think at that point, we are a little bit fundamentally different at 64 to 97. We do talk about how those globs later in the tiers do get bigger. So 64 to 97 isn't as big as you might think by 33 points. But we are saying a little bit different things about him. And maybe I just didn't do a deep enough dive on Gray to see his recent work. But that one stood out to me because I think in general, we've been more or less aligned on John Gray over his career. So it did stand out. And then a guy that you've been keen on now for a couple weeks that I need to get some eyes on because I've been meaning to make it a point is Jonathan Cannon. Because I haven't seen it. literally not I've watched and not seeing what you like. I have not seen Jonathan Cannon. And so I am giving him a little bit of a 30,000 foot ranking based on his results only. So I haven't done enough work on him and we have a big discrepancy. It does lead me to think that in that instance, you know, I got to be careful of an appeal to authority fallacy here. But when we're that far apart and you look at the guys every day, I am wondering, do I have something amiss there on the Jonathan Cannon
type? I mean, there's certainly, I think something you have to do, you just can't get around it with how much stuff we do, is you have to trust your general understanding of who a guy is.
Yeah.
And I'm reliant on my own internal assessment saying, look, this is where I have this guy and I haven't been alerted of anything else that should make me shift just when I do the roundups and everything like that. And there certainly have been times that I have missed just a shift somewhere. I am holding on to an idea of him or a feeling of him that just isn't present anymore, or vice versa, where it's, hey, this is a me projecting or wish casting something that he hasn't really done and I should stop getting on that train.
I think that first point you mentioned is where I'm probably at with Gray. John Gray. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And then the latter might be where I'm at with Cannon, where I just need to be put on a little bit more, maybe get some eyes on one of or two of his starts. I do see the excellent walk rate and I do like that. And I'm curious if you see maybe a little bit more potential for swing and miss or some ability to kind of limit some of the hits and walks that we've seen. But yeah, those two guys jumped out because they were big splits, even though I bet once we discuss them, we're not going to be as far off as the numbers suggest there.
So let's just go like that. I feel what would be best is for me to talk about Cannon, what I like about him. Then I want you to go into Young Gray and we can kind of go from there. And
perfect.
With Jonathan Cannon, I mean, if you haven't really gotten that chance to do it, I just highly recommend watching that game against Houston. I mean, that was really him at his peak. You could even argue the previous one against the Mariners. That was 7 innings of 1 run, 7 Ks, which was also fantastic. But that one against Houston, I think you could really get a sense of, oh, this is a pitcher who goes in and out, who has a changeup that looks pretty dang good with a good drop to it, sinkers that go arm side and sweepers and cutters that go glove side. He's a guy that finagles, that has better stuff than your traditional command-focused arm. And one thing that I certainly have learned to appreciate more over the years are guys who are efficient. That doesn't necessarily mean low walk rates. It means pitches per out.
Yep.
And being able to actually go almost a complete game shutout, as he did against the Astros. And honestly, they gave him 2 chances at it and 106 pitches, but you couldn't get 2 batters. And that's why he got pulled there and wasn't able to complete it. But you can't do that unless you're an efficient pitcher. And that means you are throwing pitches that would induce contact that would be outs. Obviously, you need to get some luck in it, but you have to give yourself a chance to do it. And having some sort of swing and miss ability too. So you throw all that together and you see, oh yeah, Ken is going to have those floors. And I get that of 6 earned runs and 4 runs against the Twins and Rays. He had just 3 against Colorado, 5 against your Detroit Tigers, which was
the Tigers jumped him. I actually didn't get to see that. That was a Sunday afternoon. I even remember that. I listened to a little bit on the radio. Tigers got the big lead and I was like, oh, I'll check in later because, you know, Tigers should win this one. And so that's the main reason that I missed Jonathan Cannon. It was coming off those 2 excellent starts and then he got cooked. I didn't see any reason to go back and watch it, but 2 first inning homers against lefties. Cannon does have a colossal split thus far. 507 OPS against righties, 1103 against lefties. Is that small sample craziness? There's 6 homers against lefties, 1 against righties. Do you see anything in the arsenal that explains that to where you're not surprised? And most importantly, is it fixable for Cannon and his big platoon split?
So what I really like about Cannon is that there is a cutter and change up here. And against lefties,
which are platoon pitches.
Exactly. Most are for lefties. And then sinker sweeper are really the things against righties. The cutter and the sinker have been hit a lot, 53% ICR each on those pitches. And I can certainly grasp that, okay, that's the area where things need to get better for Cannon. I don't know if it should be 26% sinker usage, fine. But I do actually believe in that cutter and the changeup for the long term with Cannon. And really, when it comes down to my ranking of this, it's not necessarily me saying, oh, no, he's the next Michael King. go and get him now. It's saying, well, what is his matchup this week? He gets the Marlins. And I believe it's the Marlins. Yes, the Marlins. I'll take that. I'll take a team that I don't trust as much to jump Cannon as much or to really exploit that weakness as much. And I could very much see an efficient 6-7 innings here even from Cannon once again. Even that game against Colorado, I think he pitched really well. It was just 4 base runners in 5 innings with 3 earned runs, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with an outing like that. You know, the couple homers, thankfully Colorado doesn't punish him too much for that with Cannon because he only allowed the 4 base runners.
Right. So then I see essentially his last 4 games, he was in relief for 3 innings, got a save. But even once the last 3 starts, he's looked like the guy he's supposed to be and really just this ridiculous inning against the Tigers and that's it. So I'm willing to take that chance against the Marlins. And it's essentially the way I do the list is around 70s or so. And then later, it's all just, hey, are you okay this week? Because you're not worthwhile to stash for 10 days on my team.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a huge call out there about, you know, holding guys that you're not using. Justin and I have talked quite a bit about that when it comes to injuries or even just streamers and team streamers. That's why I have been highlighting the idea of a team streamer, even though it's not a new concept. Like people have been streaming guys from their reserve to their starting lineup forever. I just like having a name to it the way you do with a lot of different things. And finding those team streamers is important. Who can really stay on the roster for a week that you're not using them? That's a high bar to clear, especially in 10s and 12s. And so, you know, Cannon probably straddling that right now for you. It seems like you're very encouraged by some of the things he's been doing, but another dud or two, like the Detroit one, would probably move you off. I don't think that'll happen against Miami, though.
I don't think so either. But you're absolutely right. And also the question of Clevinger and everything like that.
Yep.
It's, again, my rankings are like, it's just this week when it comes to like that point and lower. If you want to say like, no, in a 15 team, I need to be different 100%. I think I would change this rank if it were Cannon in 15, because there's just, what is it, like 36 extra starters you have to hoard, and then it becomes really tough. So you can't really do that, in a 15. So I totally get that.
All right. So you want to talk a little John Gray?
Yes.
Because he's on the other end for me. You know, I think it's just that I probably haven't, or maybe haven't, I'm not going to fully say that this is the case yet, but maybe just not concerned enough about his June. I kind of gave him a pass for it. Like, I know the Mets and Baltimore cooked him. And 2 months ago, we would have said, okay, well, that's a bad team cooking you and a good team. You get partial credit. Now it's 2 of the best teams going right now that cook him, right? Like, I can get him off the hook a little bit for getting beat up by the Mets because they're taking on all comers right now. For most of the year, they've been great against lefties. Now, even during this Grimace run, they're even cooking righties. So I think maybe I just didn't punish him enough for that, though, because I still kept him top 70, and that's pretty hard. I think it's because 6 scoreless against KC mixed in between those didn't make me think that he's completely off kilter. The part that I'm really am concerned with Gray, and does deserve, even if I want to stay aggressive, because again, you've got him in the 90s, I've got him in the late 60s. Even if I want to stay aggressive, I think he deserves a 10, 12 point dip, because the Ks have been really light here, even during the good outing, 3 Ks in 6 innings. So I think just as I deep dive him right now, he was kind of anchored to where he was, John Gray. He still has a 15% strikeout minus walk, home run rates in line and everything. ERA indicators are fine. And I just didn't dive onto the July and say, hey, he does deserve a little bit of a decline. So I'll already concede without even hearing your points that John Gray does need to be a bit lower. It's a matter of how low based on what you're going to tell me about him. Because again, you've got him at 97, was it?
Yeah, I have John Gray down by the end.
Yeah, and I got him at 64. And I'm thinking, let's operate as though I have him at 76 right now. Because that's where I'm going to move him immediately. And then we'll go from there.
Yeah, it's one of those things where he gets the Padres this week. I feel like that's okay with the Padres. When it comes to John Gray, for me, when it comes to John Gray, it's really about like, hey, look, are you really cooking with your slider or not? Because that's really the impetus of everything. And then it's like, great, you have that down, so at least I can maybe buy into the strikeout stuff. Then it's fastball, and you know, and I talked about Gray, and he really introduced to me, like, John Gray does more manipulation with his fastball than you realize. So it doesn't really feel like just like one pitch, but it really has been always the hindrance, I think, for him. And it's really just like, hey, this is a dope slider, but I don't know. And that always freaks me out, kind of like the Wasker rule of just it can't only be a good slider. So I'm always a little bit hesitant, but like, all right, maybe it does work against the Padres, but I don't feel like I need to hoard this guy. I don't feel like this is going to be the dude that's going to give me like a 23% strikeout rate and solid ratios throughout and good wins and all that kind of stuff. The Rangers aren't winning as many games. And
yeah,
if the ratios are back and forth, it's very cherry bomb. I'm like, I don't feel like I need to put myself in harm's way, but I can understand that he could go off on a month run or something along those lines. It just wasn't it to me.
And I think that's fair, right? And then it goes back to our general point about these clusters being large. You can have your favorites within them and some guys that you're off on, because I don't even know if I can totally sway you. Like, okay, yeah, no San Diego this week. Does get a two-step next week, but it's both on the road and one of them's Houston. The other is the Angels. We like that for John Gray, but we don't love a trip to Houston. So you're right. Is he somebody that has to be held? He's on that fringe line to me where personal preference can maybe click him over somebody. But I think even 74 or whatever I said, the 70s I was moving up to, I think even that is probably a touch too high right now. So as much as I love Gray, I'm not taking him off the 100, and he's still on yours too. But I do think he's more of an 80s guy for me until he shows something. He can catch that run, but the 128 whip that you highlighted, that's a real issue.
Yeah,
that's hurting you. Like, so he needs to be bringing the K's, or he needs to be bringing the wins. And Texas isn't winning right now. Their offense is suspect. I think there's real reasons to be concerned about their offense too. So yeah, good calls there. And you got me to definitely move off of Gray a bit.
So we're going to transition now into the main chunk of this, which is going through the actual real tiers. And honestly, like, I don't know. The only interesting one I think maybe is Gerrit Cole, but do what you want with Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, I think it's kind of an open thing right now where, you know, where do you want to have him? What do you believe in? You got him down at 13 coming off the dud. I get it. I have him at 6. Yes, that is a big difference, especially at the high end there. For me, it's just like I'm not really grading him yet. He came in the top 10. He's staying there for another 2 starts. If those are bumpy, then I make my move on Gerrit Cole. You've made the move sooner. I respect it. I don't even want to pretend like I want to convince you to push him up. I just kind of want to wait and see a little bit. I'm giving him credit right now just for historical, basically.
It's kind of interesting. I've been called many a thing, from sticking too much to my guns to also moving to guys too quickly. And I think if
so
I get
literally the two opposite things.
So if I get both of them, that means I'm doing it right, because I'm selective on it and understand the nuance of it. And for me, I had Gerrit Cole, I think, initially at 13. And then after the first one where I saw him across 60 plus pitches, but 4 innings, pretty much looking like himself against the Orioles, it's like, no, it's him. It's fine. So I moved him up. And then I said, oh, wait, he looked obviously terrible against the Mets. And then there was also the decline of velocity a little bit in that third start. So I'm just like, okay, I need you to be Gerrit Cole, be Gerrit Cole. And then we're good.
For me.
So I pulled him back down. Cause I mean, there is an idea that like Kyle Bradish came back from injury and he wasn't okay. And I know there was another one I'm forgetting too. So
there is another one that was a concern.
Nagging at us and I can't remember it right now, but, it's not fun.
Who was it?
So I don't know, right?
I can't remember either. But Bradish was a good one, right? And there were points where
maybe
it looked
Walker
like he
Buehler?
Was maybe it was just Buehler.
Yeah.
Because he's been uneven. But either way, you know, we give the studs their credit, and Bradish hasn't necessarily earned the track record of a Cole or whatever, but we got Cole way high. I totally get why you're saying, okay, I'm going to punish him here. And I will say, these are pivotal starts. Boston this weekend and then a trip to Baltimore next week. If we don't see Cole be Gerrit Cole, then I'm moving him down too. And you're probably moving him down further if he struggles in those outings. So eager to see how he does going into the break, Gerrit Cole, for sure.
And then there's then Garrett Crochet. I pushed him all the way up to 5 just because it's just been so stupid good. And I think
Justin wanted me to get him up there.
And nice. And the pushback, which is understandable. I'm curious about your take about it. I rambled a lot with Samulski on the Corner podcast, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts just about everyone's big braining of innings limits down the stretch, or if he gets traded, how much are you influencing or having those thoughts influence this rank?
Not at all, actually. In fact, especially in your situation, it should be the furthest thing from your mind because you're on a weekly basis. I'm on more of a 3 to 4 week basis, and it's not even in my mind. And I made a note. I even said, hey, y'all, this update does not take into those innings issues into considerations because those guys are not going to be hampered by that in July, most likely. And if they are, I'm not going to know, right? So yeah. Even if they does come out and say, oh, we're going to skip Skeens the week of the All-Star just so that he gets a long break. They might do that, but I'm not going to grade him off of that because I don't know that they're going to, right? We start worrying about that stuff in August and beyond. So right now, Crochet, and Justin did talk me into moving him up a little bit. He did want me to get him all the way up there, kind of where you've got him top five. Nice. Because he goes, well, if you're only looking at the next month, then you really should have him all the way up there because, yeah, for that short period, we love Crochet. We love Skeens. We can worry about the inning stuff down the line. So, yeah, right now, I think that is the managing innings limits and trying to get ahead of it in fantasy is kind of similar to the way the teams actually manage them in real life. A lot of work goes into it and very little comes out of it. Like people try to get ahead of it and worry about it and try to make moves, and it's never done very well.
Yeah, oftentimes people shoot themselves in the foot doing
exactly
that kind of stuff.
I don't worry about it, especially with a guy like this. Crochet, you either picked up off waivers or drafted with your very last pick or something very cheap. And I think that matters. I know some cost fallacy and all that. I don't agree that it doesn't matter what you paid for him because you're not replacing a third rounder or a fifth rounder or a 10th rounder. You're replacing somebody who you got very late. He's been pitching like an ace. So you might be relying on him more than you thought you would with Crochet, but you don't need to plan to take a third rounder out of your lineup. Figure it out when it gets there. Pitching is way too fluid to try to trade somebody in July who might get shut down in August and September. The trade piece is totally different too. We don't know how guys react. Everyone's different. Jack Flaherty was horrendous last year with Baltimore after the trade. If he gets traded this year, he could put up a 2 ERA in 2 months. Would anybody really be surprised? You don't know. So no, I'm not worried about Crochet and Jones and Skeens. I'm along for the ride all the way through.
So I'm very much in agreement with you here. I do want to make a clarification that when I talk about next week and everything, that is more so for 70 and beyond. I would say the next month or so is more about like 40 through 70. And then it's truly rest of season from like the first top 40. Just because this is a ranking of rest of season if I am drafting today.
Yeah, exactly. But right? You know that you're still going to update those though.
Oh, the update. Yes.
So I don't think you have to, like, even if you are saying that, yes, this top 100 I put out this week could be used to be drafted, I still don't think you should take into consideration that Crochet could be shut down. First of all,
I agree with you completely. Yeah. There was just I just wanted to clarify.
But I like what you're saying there.
How much the list is done, and that's what it is. Because
the deeper you get, the shorter your focus is.
You're not dropping these guys. So it's rest of season. You know?
Exactly. And I do agree with that. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So we're going to move on to the more of the teens, 20s, 30s, that kind of thing. And we're going to go over all of those after this break.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All right. So moving on down a little bit. I mean, I think it, I don't want to spend much time on him. Sonny Gray's a four difference. I don't know if I can, like, Sonny Gray's one of the weird ones. It's just, I guess I'm going to do it. But I feel as if Sonny Gray always goes on these high runs for a bit and then it does peter off.
Sure.
You know, he's a little more tumultuous throughout the entire season, but it is always great in there and you're always happy with it. And I'm glad that he's really looking like an ace because he hasn't, honestly, in years, like really been that ace like he did for the first half until of 2020, then after, you know? Yeah. Yeah, but it wasn't like I didn't give him ace that he's going to ace tag last year. And
were you always worried about that home run?
It was more just inefficiency. Yeah. Maybe times the slider and the curve would not be there for strikes.
Ooh. He's a great example, Sonny Gray, of the concept you just mentioned about efficiency, not necessarily tying to walk rate. Because his walk rates have been very good most of his career, or at least since 21. And yet he is regularly inefficient. And you wouldn't look at it with a 7% walk rate and say, oh, no, Sonny Gray is super efficient. He just, no, there are games where he really gets out. Sorry, I just want to circle back to that because that's a great example of that concept. So yeah, I got him high right now. One of the things I loved going into the year was, yes, that home run rate from last year, the 5% homer to fly ball that allowed him to have the MLB best 0.4 homer per nine. We all knew that was going to regress some, but going to St. Louis was going to mitigate that because their home ballpark is a nice pitcher place to go to. So I feel like he's been doing pretty much what he did last year with a few things different. He's riding a pretty hot 198 average against, which I doubt will hold all year. Homer to fly ball is up to 9% and 0.7 homer nine. I can live with that. As long as it doesn't go back north of one, I think Gray's a stud. I understand the kind of general trepidation with him. Even me slotting him at 10, I'm like, okay, but he keeps doing it. So I'm going to stick by Sonny Gray. But I do understand there's always a little bit of wobbliness too, because his health piece over the years has always been a factor as well.
So looking further into this, one of the bigger differences really, I mean, there's Joe Ryan. I have him at 10. You have him at 18. I think you're worried about the home run rate rising going forward. Always. Understood. And then Dylan Cease, we have a 14-point gap. I totally get it. I really do. We know how good the strikeouts can be. There are signs maybe that the Padres are making him better. I could be just not giving him enough credit. Talk to me more about Dylan Cease and why you think that he's above, say, like Grayson Rodriguez, for example.
So Justin and I had the discussion on him yesterday, and I will also say that I get the other side of it too, because we know the volatility of Cease. I just trust that he's in the good groove again, more so than last year. I still think last year is the anomaly generally, even though it remains in the range of outcomes because his consistency with his command can go in and out. I do love the improved walk rate. Like, that is undeniably nice. And while I am somebody who definitely rounds all the time and doesn't say the decimal, I will point out that he's down to 7.5 from 10%, which is really nice. 10 to 8 doesn't sound as good, but 10 to 7.5 sounds a bit better. So I'm being a hypocrite. I'm using it when it suits me.
What's right in the middle? You couldn't, it's always so hard. Exactly. When 0.5, you're like, what am I doing?
Exactly. So you use it to your benefit. It's a 7% walk rate when it's good for me. But either way, I like what Cease is doing. Again, I think he's more 21, 22 version than 23 with improved control. And so I just believe in him to kind of keep the groove going. I do understand the trepidation though, because he's good for a five bomb kind of once a month type deal when things aren't working. But the other four of those starts in a given month are usually so good that I really, really have a lot of trust. And the K's always give him such a foundation that even in the duds, we usually, like, the Milwaukee starts perfect, right? Milwaukee's scary. I wasn't going to bench him against the Milwaukee, even though they're really good. But even when Cease gives up four in 4 2/3, still 10 Ks. So I just think he's so bankable with those Ks. And the fact that he's actually helping the whip this year instead of hitting it is a big factor for Dylan Cease for me.
Yeah, so here's this is really the main problem I have at the moment. Yes. Is he's looking, okay, it's two seasons of Dylan Cease. The first eight games and the most recent nine. The first eight was a 2.19 ERA with a 0.75 whip. And now it's a 5.51 ERA and a 1.37 whip. It's been tougher. And what generally happens with Cease is he has struggles with his mechanics. We see it in starts. We see all of a sudden that the home runs come back because now he's throwing worse fastballs and he can't find something. And then guys are keyed in on it and bam, there you go. The home run rate went up, of course, 17.6% home run fly ball versus 4% before. The BABIP went up 200 points. And you want to say, okay, it's all in the middle, then it's all in the middle, then that's great, because that's a 3.4 ERA with a 1.06 whip. I very much treat my rankings a lot of like how stable they are on a given night. It's more of an feeling. It's this weird thing about me, and it's my way of staving off AI. And with Cease, it's just one of those, we're not quite over that hump of like, I know that the ratios are going to be good tonight.
I think that's fair.
And it's hard for me to do that where like, I feel as if Jack Flaherty for me is about to get that ace, is going to ace tag. We both have him at 20. Like, I feel so much stronger that Flaherty is going to have a good night right now than Cease. That said, the swings of Cease are ridiculous. He just has like a 12 strikeout, one earned run over seven innings or something like that. Like, oh, that's great. I will bang my fist on the table as long as I need to. I insist that Dylan Cease will not ever be the consistent guy unless he has a third pitch he can throw strikes with.
No, I agree. And hasn't he flashed one at times this year that has caught like your eye? Putters.
He's thrown like a couple and
briefly flat. If you blink it, you miss. Blink and miss it.
I will yell and yell and yell, guys.
What do you put into Cease's distinct schedule split in that he is absolutely owning crummy teams and should be out of baseball against good ones? It's one.
Is that right? Is it that clearly?
It's so stark. Against- 189 ERA, 071 whip in 10 starts against crummy teams.
Yeah, you're right.
718, 165 against the goodies.
The only good team
and the
was
schedule hit him.
Coors, but I mean, even like Rocky Coors was
at
terrible
Milwaukee
in April.
And at Milwaukee in April was pretty good, but then Philly cooked him. And then look at
Mets,
the
Grimace.
Exactly. Grimace, Yankees, Mets, Milwaukee Atlanta. Again.
Yeah, that so is actually really interesting. I do maybe
do we get to a world where we
about
maybe,
guys not tasting out of the zone as much against him, or
but do we do anything good with it? Is it actionable with Cease to where we may even consider starting to? Because like a guy like that ranked that high, you and I are usually not doing. That's a set it and forget it in the
pretty
top
much
30 for the most part. Do we start to maybe change a little bit with Cease, like a tough roadie against somebody, or even just? If the Yankees, I guess he's faced the Yankees, so he won't again. But, you know, the Dodgers, he's in their division. He's going to get them again. Is that something that you maybe start to do? Because he also is, never mind. I was going to say he's also a little bit worse on the road, but no. ERA-wise, yes, but not.
Those are weird. Also, home road.
Yeah, I don't like getting too locked into those
also,
anyway.
I mean,
unless
you're making a case that the park factors get worse in San Diego as they go on.
Yeah.
It's always nicer in April.
But I guess Atlanta next week specifically would be that first test with Cease.
Yeah.
Is there a world where you consider sitting him in like a 10 or 12?
Sure, I can see that. Certainly in a 10. I think really it's if my heart says like, look, I think we're always going to have to deal with some sort of inconsistency.
Yep.
Regardless of the opponents, it is interesting that it has been this way so far. I wonder if that will continue with the strength of schedule. But until we see that strike pitch you can rely on where it's like, okay, one of these aren't working now. I'm not just like one pitch guy. Like, oh, he even tried to go for curveballs and sweepers. And it's like, those are not good though. And if you're going to try something, just don't try that. Just try the grounder. drives me
the
nuts.
The answer's right there. Just use the
This is the thing.
It's right there.
Even like Musgrove is there and Darvish and like, yo, what's up? We got cutters? You want a cutters in the zone? I got some cutters in the zone.
We can teach you. You think they got a trench coat with cutters?
Yeah, right. It's just like slightly different tilts on the ball.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, that makes sense for the separation that we have here with Cease. You have him at 19, I have him at 33. Another one that's actually kind of similar, I would say, is Luis Gil. And we have a 10 spot gap at the moment, 27-37. And I can quickly summarize my hesitation. It's actually not the Orioles game. It's the Mets game. And the Orioles game was just what I call bamboozling, which is where like your Tigers jumping off on a cannon, just attacking, this whatever, there you go. That's what the Orioles did to Gil and his fastball. But what Gil had done prior and had this unreal run was actually throwing strikes and getting his four-seamer in the zone, and then sliders and changeups getting above 60% strikes, either at least one of them doing it and going the bomb of the zone, and it was great. And that game against the Mets, terrible. I mean, the command was just horrific. And it made me think that maybe, okay, this is the valley a little bit of Eliseo at the moment. Generally, guys come out of it. But right now, it's not the easiest start to make. We have a lot of other guys. I mean, the top 40 is stacked, let me tell you.
Yeah.
It's kind of hilarious how stark the difference is of 25 to 40 versus 40 to 55. It's monstrous. So because of that, I feel at 37. You just kind of sound like, all right, I'm giving him longer of a chance here.
Exactly. It's just that.
Yeah.
I totally understand the concerns with Heel. The two bad starts, you know, this is like mega Vargas. It's not even Vargas rule, but if it was, it'd be like Vargas rule plus, where he certainly gets way more than this before we move off. So I moved him, but I tried to keep it a little bit tempered, but I don't really have a problem with your ranking. I understand.
Yeah.
And the thing of it is too, with a guy like Heel, a young guy that is having this big rush out of nowhere, kind of, is it can evaporate quickly because the walks have been there all year. You're still talking about a guy with a 13% walk rate. We could get rug pulled here if we're not careful. So you need to stay keeping tabs on Heel, especially if he has become an important part of your pitching, right? I mentioned that concept earlier with Crochet about like, oh yeah, you picked him late or he was a waiver pickup, but you might have lost Strider. So now you are counting on him as an ace. Like that could have happened with Heel. You could have lost some of the pitchers this year. So even though you paid something cheaper for him, he is a more important piece for you. If that is the case with Heel, you need to be dialed in. It's a two-step this week, both home against Cincy, Boston, and then a trip to Baltimore. These last three starts before the break, I think are going to give you a real indication of how trustworthy Heel's going to be in that second half. They've also said that they're not going to hard stop him, but instead try to manage it with the innings. Oh, yeah. One good way to do that would maybe be to skip the Baltimore start next week. Let a AAA guy wear that and just give him an extended break.
I think that's actually a real challenge. I think that's a really
good opportunity. I'm scared of it, though. He's on all my teams.
So then if you're saying that for them to skip it, then fine. Then skip it yourself.
No, I wouldn't. I'm not going to sit. No, I'm not going to sit him. I'm not good enough to know that he might have a bad outing. I'm just nervous that facing Baltimore. I agree with your concept.
I'm not putting around with you,
yeah. No, but you're 100% right. We should want him to have to go into Baltimore and deal and rematch them. I'm saying from my ERA standpoint, I'm nervous about it, though.
Yeah, of course.
But no, I would not sit him personally.
One, I think this is an interesting transition a little bit to some of these later guys. There are some middling ones I do want to talk about, but I have grouped Luis Heel with two other guys. It seems to me that you are separating them out a lot. And those other two are Taj Bradley and Mackenzie Gore. Two high strikeout guys, lots of potential, who have not had necessarily the run that Heel has, but then again, Taj Bradley is on a run. And Mackenzie Gore against the Mets yesterday, which I knew about I didn't know about when doing this. I knew about the Yariel Rodriguez and Hunter Brown, when I did mine, but Mackenzie Gore's 30% plus strikeout rate has so many opportunities of looking like that ace. There is a gap for you. It's 27 for Heel, and then Bradley and Mackenzie Gore are 43 and 44. Going a little bit more into detail about that gap for you, because I could be missing this and I could be a little bit too aggressive on Taj Bradley or maybe I'm just too down on Heel.
No, I actually quite like Bradley. I felt like, you know how sometimes you're ranking someone like you feel good about it. Like you feel like this is a confident ranking. Then you see somebody you respect rank them 8 spots higher. You're like, oh, well, did I come in light? Because I really do like Bradley quite a bit. I think I'm more too high on Heel. Like I'm more open to bringing him back and maybe having them meet in the middle there around that Ranel Blanco, Michael King area of 36, sure. 37, which is right around where you already have Bradley and Heel for that matter. So yeah, right. I think just kind of looking at the group.
Pepe was the last one, right?
I love Pepe.
Same idea. Yeah,
I love Pep. Yeah, I stayed the course with him. He's at 34. So to your point, it's like, well, A, why aren't Bradley and Gore getting more credit? bring them up a little bit. And then is Heal getting a little bit too much credit? Because I even pointed out the crazy walk rate. So yeah, I think I'm convinced to make some moves there and bring Heal closer back down there and bump Bradley a little bit too with Gore. I do see them as kind of righty lefty of each other, mm-hmm. Bradley and Gore. So yeah, they kind of link together. Oh, so man, if I move Bradley, I will drag Gore. Just don't read too deeply into it. It's not really, like there are, it is young, high prospect stud breaking out. Right. That's it. Not like the same arsenal or anything like that.
I mean, I have those four guys together, like young strikeout heavy guys who are still trying to get enough
that had prospect hype.
Right.
That were supposed to be G's.
Right. And the thing about Bradley too, is I'm finally like sold on, oh yeah, you are going four seamer splitter focus now. And you just had a second start of going 70% strikes on both. Oh, that's good. That's really, really good. He has near 70% strike rate on his splitter right now for the year. And that's finally, there's something there too, that instead of just trying to be all cutter and curveball, instead four seamer splitter is definitely a better approach there for Taj Bradley. I do want to talk about the middling tier, which I think is generally like, I think where we have the most disagreement overall mm-hmm. about just the stability of what matters in a 15 teamer versus a 10, 12, that kind of thing. Really, really, I do 12. And it's like we both have Suarez at 30, by the way. Amazing.
Hey, we're trying to get ahead.
Amazing that we got this right at 30 together.
I love it.
Incredible. I just want to point that one out. But no, it's like it's Ronaldo Lopez, Justin Steele, Logan Webb, Framber Valdez, Ronaldo Blanco, Michael King, Christopher Sanchez. That grouping, I have actually Framber Valdez removed from this. I know. Sounds crazy.
No, I get it.
But at the end of the day, he's a cherry bomb. Like, it's just so volatile. It's crazy. He can't throw strikes with his curve and his changeup. And mm-hmm. then his main thing is a sinker that is as volatile of in play as you'll find. And like, it's just bad against righties.
For Framber to be shifted to a cherry bomb is so devastating because his calling card is supposed to be stability. Yep. It is supposed to be a set, forget, check in at the end of the year with your two bills of innings that are high quality. Right. And so I think that's totally fair. In fact, when I was putting together the list and seeing that we had a big split, it did cause me to kind of give a second look and be like, because I moved him down. I'm a huge Framber guy. I mean, I had him top 10 coming into the year because I was like, give me 200 great innings with, 16 wins almost guaranteed on Houston. Moved him down in May to 20 and then 35 here in July. But you got him at 50. And I definitely don't think you're wrong. I don't have him there. I think there's more than one right answer when it comes to rankings because there is some preferential, vibe to it. I certainly don't think it's wrong. I got Nestor Cortes at 50, and now I'm thinking you instantly do the comp, Nestor versus Framber. Damn, Nick, I might go Nestor.
I have actually 59 at Nestor, but right, it's the same tier of cherry bomb.
Exactly.
I call Nestor a Toby now. I mean,
Nestor. At least with Nestor, if you want to go back to that stability piece, he doesn't walk guys. We're starting to see more Framber walks, and he's paying for him too because he's not getting the double play right after it. So I will concede that I think I might, I have some regret on Framber keeping him that high. I think I maybe should have at least gone into the early 40s. I want to stick with my guy. I don't want to overreact to a mediocre June, but I do need to be letting people know, like, it isn't just a pure set and forget in your shallower formats. So you might see Framber get, I do my 3X for 10 team, 12 team, and 15. Mm-hmm. He might have an empty spot for some 10 teamers soon where you might be sitting him, right? Like, not very often, but he's also not a guy that you automatically just don't check in on anymore the way we did the last 2 years with Framber.
I think it's really just a product of like the quality of, I mean, it's really the top 50 now. I was saying top 40, but like top 50.
Oh, because you're saying the depth of talent around him also hurts him.
It's just that, I mean, look, I want to have Jake Irvin right now for his Ryan Moore. Like, it's ridiculous what he's doing. I don't know how long it's going to go, but I believe in that curveball. I mean, it's been amazing, and I'm going to roll with that. I'll take a chance on Max Scherzer being Max Scherzer more, and Nathan Eovaldi being what we wanted Framber to be at the moment.
And when Eovaldi is healthy, you want to go with him. Yeah, Olsen, I mean, you want to talk about hard luck, though. That he's 2-8 with those numbers is so.
But he's got two now. He's got two now. I know.
Finally, he was on zero for entirely too long. At least he's got the pair. But my goodness, he's so hard luck this year.
how I structure the list for me is, before we get to the cherry bomb tier, it's you have aces gonna ace guys the first two, and then it's an alternation of like these are ace potentials that we think are gonna be that. Then mm-hmm. it's that stability tier, what I call a holly, which is like you're not an ace, you're not gonna be like, cool, I expect you to go like six innings and eight strikeouts or whatever every time with like amazing ratios or whatever. But it's like, cool, it's gonna be six innings and like maybe hopefully a strikeout an inning, mm-hmm. something like that. And then you have another layer of ace potential who are like, okay, just get the next step, please, as opposed to, oh yeah, just do what you're doing. And then you have one more round of like, you were not a Toby. You're like, you're not going to get dropped, but you're not someone that I just every night is just always, always, always amazing.
Is that tier six group?
Right. So that's right before the cherry bomb one. So those are the guys like Eovaldi, and that's like Scherzer. That's where Jake Irvin is right now. That's where Reese Olson is. Carter Crawford's in that. And that's the area that I'm thinking like, right, you are solid. And I like this, but also, you know, I can see that going from you want to get into that one if you're a cherry bomb, right? But I would rather go with that than Kevin Gausman, who's just like, what the heck, man?
I was actually just about to bring him up. We both
Framber Valdez, right?
We both gave Gausman a tumble. And I think my bias, so like on that one, it was easy for me to get him to 47 because I was biased against him coming into the year. Only had him at 23 in spring. I think my bias is working the other way with Framber. I started so high with him that I've had trouble bringing him down to where he belongs, but I think he should probably be with Gausman, that big name that is not putting up the numbers to back it. And those players can be very dangerous in fantasy because you trust the name too much without digging into the game logs and understanding. I think you put it in your write-up like, hey, y'all, he's popping you. This is Framber. He's popping you with a 411, 129 right now. That ain't doing it for you. That's nothing in a 10. That's not very good in a 12. No, and even in a 15, that is starting to sting you, especially the whip. The 4.11 ERA you can live with in a 15 for sure. But a 129 whip, that is painful from Framber. So yeah, we need to see some turn from him coming into the break, or I am going to have a sharp downturn with my post-trade deadline rankings with Framber.
And it's kind of funny too, is that like I have these guys like Justin Steele, Lopez Blanco, and Webb, who normally you'd be more in on than me. But I have them higher.
I know. Let me amend the 4.11 ERA. That's not helping you in 15s either, really. 4.11 right now, you would be 14th in my league if you had a 4.11 ERA.
Oh, wow.
You know, an individual guy is a little different than the composite. But the bottom line is Framber is hurting right now, and he does deserve a move down.
And actually, we're going to talk about those other guys. I mean, we got a lot more to go over. It might go a little bit long in this fireside. We're going to go through all of that after this break.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
So I do, you know, I know I hinted at Steele and Lopez and Blanco and Webb. And I imagine it's just like, look, you see a little bit more of a ceiling with your Freddy Peralta, with your trying to see who they like, Bailey Ober, maybe Tanner Bibee, who has been on a great run. And I'm starting to believe because of the curveball. The curveball is here finally. So, okay. But just as long as that stays, then okay. I get it. And I don't really feel like we're that far off on him. I know we talked about Blanco last week, Lopez, we understand there's some regression. I will say Justin Steele, you might not be getting enough credit to.
I fully agree. We don't even have to really get into it.
Okay.
So last night I took off a few guys that I had forgotten about their injuries from last week. Mm. And in that update, I meant to move Steele up. I didn't. And I didn't want to rerun the boards again. It was late at night, so I went to bed. But he should be in the top 25 for sweet. Sure.
Okay, good.
Then so we're all good. No, I fully agree. I've already moved him on my internal sheet.
And thank God we're both at 23 for Pablo Lopez. Let's go.
Let's go, baby.
So we're going to go more to the outside the top 50 here. And I'm just trying to see where we might have some differences. Bryce Miller, I can get behind 46. I had just had him in the cherry bomb area because I'm not quite sold the secondaries are going to be the same after what we just saw from the last start. I imagine that's kind of the same idea from you. Like 46 versus 54 really is not much of a conversation.
This is in that range where it's just not that fundamentally different. We see similar things. I'm giving him some credit for the improvements against lefties this year with Bryce Miller, but also not fully bought in that he has fixed his problems there. So I also share your concerns just with a little bit higher rank.
I am a little surprised to see that Gavin Williams didn't get a higher rank from you.
And I was surprised the other way, but I always applaud you for, you do this with prospects when they first debut, you put them like where you believe they should go. It's not a wait and see, rank them too low, because correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think that you do it in part to make sure that people don't forget about them or not give them enough attention in their waivers. It's more that
if I don't, you're not like, this is Gavin Williams is someone I do believe is that. And if I had the other guys, I would say, no, I'm going to go after Williams.
Yeah. So you're trying to spur people to go after these guys, which I do appreciate that you're not making them do three good starts or something. So yeah, that was when I looked at and I was like, dang, Nick has him a lot higher. There's nothing to go off of, right? Except for the minors.
Although, we do know he's at 82 pitches is a nice thing, and he has the velocity and everything that we
I was just about to say, and you have the data. So actually we don't have nothing to go off
have
of.
Today app, by the way. Have you checked that out?
Wait, what?
So with PL Pro members, we have a app
I need PL Pro.
I gave it to you.
Did you? When?
Yes.
When?
When we launched it last year. I'll give it to you. Don't worry.
Are you sure?
100%.
Because I thought you did, and then I didn't want to be like all beggy about it. But when I went in,
this is the funniest thing the sport has done. Everyone knows here that I obviously gave Sport PL Pro.
We have
an app that is, I'll make sure you see it. It's our Four Seamer Today app that allows you to get the pitch metrics of four seamers on MLB and AAA and AAA on any day. And it's live. So you can actually see it to say like, okay, minor league players based on major league performance.
Live four seamer pitch shape metrics with shape. I got it.
Yeah.
When did you give this to me? I checked this season. And it didn't happen. I was like, I need to ask
you
Nick.
When I launched. I
believe
Pro.
You.
I gave
I'm definitely going to eat it. I'm going to eat that.
Free PL Pro. I was like, you guys should just have this.
You're way too organized for me to think that it's you and not me. So I will eat it. But
and I was just like, too much bread on this podcast. But long story short, you can actually see Gavin Williams' last start, I believe, is the 24th. 23rd, you can go to that day in AAA and you'll see Gavin Williams there among everyone else. And you'll say, okay, cool. Is this good extension? Is it good velocity? Are the locations good? I've been encouraging everybody to do on the stream every day. I show it for AAA the previous day to be like, oh, who's this guy?
I saw you looking at
IDP and stuff.
And I guess I just missed the part where it was a pitching PL Pro
thing. Yeah, that
feature. I thought it was just your own back end stuff. I was like, that's fire. No, man. Because I saw you look at it so the other day.
Yeah,
I forget which day.
And it's also like it's also one of those things too. We can say like, okay, wait, hold on a second. Yeah, wait. We know Imanaga's four seamer is supposed to be 17 inches of IVB, and here he's at 15 or 16. It's like, you can actually see that pretty quickly. So it really helps for assessing MLB debuts. Also, in the minor, I can't express this enough. Like, we can see rehab starts. This is how we know that Boz is like, you're not doing the things that you used to do with your four seamer. Mm-hmm. And I would say these kind of metrics are most important when it comes to four seamers. When it comes to like secondaries of sliders and curves and changeups, I think honestly, location is more important, just general whiffs. I got to really talk to Kyle to figure out if we have some really good way of nailing that one down. But, obviously movement and stuff, but definitely check that one out. And with Gavin Williams, it's like, you're up to 82 pitches with your old four seamer. Like my preseason assessment was top 40 or like right at 40.
Yeah. I was pretty keen on Gavin Williams coming into the year too. I didn't give him enough credit, or I have done the wait and see thing here. I just parked him at 83 and I'm like, okay, we'll see what's what. You put him at 55. I got no beef with that. And now understanding that the minor league info is encouraging, because I want to be clear. I was not judging him off of whatever. I know his ERA is like near five. I don't care about that.
Oh yeah. No.
For me on the rehab stuff, if I don't have the data that Nick's talking about, then I'm just not really going to judge.
I'm so lucky that I do, right? I'm
yeah, it's still, so useful.
I'm starting Gavin Williams against the White Sox.
I don't blame you at all. I would have, is that today or is that tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Then I'll have him maybe starting the sheet, and it is tomorrow. I'm going to hat tip you about the fastball info for the minors.
Oh yeah. It's going to be terrible. So anyway, no, you actually will be able to see it live inside of that app. Really at this point, when it comes to this back end, I'm trying to see like which of the guys that I'm like, whoa, okay. So like Charlie Morton, for example, you have him up 25 spots, and I did see 25 spot difference than me, 66 versus 91. It's a case of, I understand this from you. Like, I really do. I can't deal with it. It's just anxiety. It's just pure anxiety. I just have no idea. And I'm like, is this worth it? Is it not? I just don't want to deal with it.
He is one of the bigger splits in terms of how much I would want a guy in Roto versus head to head for Charlie Morton.
Yeah.
You couldn't pay me to roster this guy in head to head, because you never know when the bad starts are coming. And obviously the difference in that for people that don't play one or the other is in Roto, just tell me what the bottom line is, right? For a guy that I'm mostly going to keep in my lineup like Morton, I just need the bottom line to be pretty good. In the head-to-head, of course, you're taking each week individually, and I don't want a guy like this eating up my life in the playoffs. So I agree with you. Like, the volatility is vomit-inducing, but yeah, he's a little bit of a set-it-and-forget-it in a 15-teamer. Hasn't been getting as many wins as you would hope him being on Atlanta, but that's because their offense hasn't been great, Nick. He does have five wins, though. 389 ERA, 125 whip. I get your end. You get my end. We do have a big split, but it's not a fundamental disagreement on who Morton is. It's just that in 15s, you can eat this more too. He's a good one that describes our difference between 12 and 15 focus as well.
So I get that. Another one that I see is David Festa.
For the rest of us?
I was pretty, Festivus for the rest of us. I wasted that on Joey Estes though.
That's not bad though. You didn't know Festa was coming. Yeah. And it works better with Estes because it ends with the, it matches Estes with the us better. Yeah. So that one is actually a better one to do it with.
With David Festa, Eno's in on him. I love the four seamer a ton.
Minor league stuff, honestly, great.
The thing about him is he has the arsenal that I always want guys to have. Like, just give me three pitches, four seamer, gyro slider, and a changeup.
Yeah,
that's it. That's the dream.
If I'm creating, whenever I create a pitcher in MLB, if I'm not getting goofy with like a knuckleball, I just want fastball, slider, change. That's it.
And if I need something else, give me a cutter. But that's, just make it horizontal, please. But it's kind of hard to get that if you're getting the gyro slider. But anyway, I see him at 88 with you. I have him at 63. And the reason for that is right there at 63, it's like with Festa, and it was Brandon Fought, who I'm more sold on because of the curveball introduction. But with those two guys, it's kind of like, I call them Spice Girls. They're like, they want to be aces, and they're like, oh, hey, there's actually a hint of it, but also could just disappear right away. You only remember the actual names of one of them. So, and that's because he married a Beckham.
No, I remember Emma Button, Baby Spice.
Emma Button. Is that actually her name?
Yeah. Button.
Cause she's like, okay. All right.
Cause
well,
she's
there you
cute
go.
As a button. I don't know.
Yeah. That's just there it her is. Name. But David Festa, I felt it was a little low at 88. Is that because of 15 team focus?
Well, actually, in a 15, I think maybe he should get a little bit more credit because, under the same concept that you're thinking of, though, take that shot. I know it is easier to do in 10s and 12s, take the shots. So then you can just replace with the Bailey Falters and the, Tobys later if they flop. But I think even in a 15, Festa was a guy that had a lot of interest. Like, there were big bids on him this week because the pitching landscape has been rough in 15s. The tough part about 15s is there's not much available in a given week. The one thing I do regret on Festa's ranking is just the fact that he has Detroit and the White Sox next. On that alone, that should have been worth like 15 spots for me. So 88 was a little bit of a park kind of put him in the range where I'm okay with him, but it's on the lower end of what his range should be. If Festa's kind of a 55 to 90 range guy for me, he should have been closer to the higher end of that. And again, especially with these two starts coming in. So I am going to relent on this one too. Because I don't have a great case against him. I like him. I'm pro Festa. I tried to get him this week. I got outbid, but no. So I'm not going to argue something I don't believe in and say, no, I put him 88 because of this, that, and the other. The minor league stuff's great. I'm very familiar with him as a prospect from some OTP stuff where I make prospect cards. So I'm big on Festa. Yeah.
Pro Festa. It sounds like a professor. I love it.
I'm very pro Festa.
Sorry, pro Festa.
Festa. You do protest. Festa.
I mean, yes. Yeah, so some of these two, like their difference on Kate Povich is just because, hey, Povich gets the Athletics this week. And I'm like, all right, there's a good win chance. Or, you know, Andrew Heaney, I have him near 70 because, yeah, he just struck out 10 Orioles and he has a matchup against the Rays. I'm like, I want to do that.
Povich was a little bit of a Festa plus for me, where it's like I view them similarly, prospects on quality teams that I like. But again, he got a little bit of the lower end of his range when maybe he should have gotten a little bit higher. I'm going to leave him here right now, but over the course of this month, I won't be surprised if I move him from 80.
Festa has more of a ceiling when it comes to strikeout.
I think so too.
Everything. Povich doesn't have a whiff pitch. Nothing is 14% swing strike rate or higher. But you should treat him like a Kobe who could get the park. It's kind of interesting. Actually, Camden is a high home run rate park still. Even this
for
year.
Right-handers, even
just in general, I'd
be curious on the split morning. There just yeah, because of the
good,
wall.
That's a good point, but that's what I thought too. The wall would limit it more, but for whatever reason, we're seeing it. So I guess for lefties,
I believe it. That's wild.
I don't know. Yeah, because I was looking at Cleveland, I was like, oh man, what is it? 29%.
Their factors have been off the charts this year.
Yeah, but with Povich, it's just think of a Toby on a winning ball club. That's all it is with Povich. Don't expect higher than a 20% strikeout rate. But otherwise, I mean, pretty much along the lines similar here. I like the fact that I have Mitch Spence at 99. You have him at 101. Look at that. I prefer him over Estes, though.
Okay.
I think that there's more intrigue with being slider cutter of surviving with the ratios.
I don't know if I'm going to really disagree with that. I have Estes higher. And I don't have a good case behind
it. I have Estes at like 105 or something mentally.
Estes at 87, and you mentioned Spence at 101. I actually loved Spence when he got Rule 5'd. I was like, ooh, that's a name to keep an eye on, y'all. I had some knowledge of him, you know, and so I was like, yes, keep tabs on him. He started in the bullpen. Now he is starting. So, yeah, I do like him. I'm not going to argue Estes over him, even though I did rank like that. I see them pretty similarly. What do you like more with Spence? You said over Estes?
Spence is that he's a slider cutter guy. And generally what one thing I've really leaned into this year is sliders in the zone are better than any other pitch in the zone. Like, it's just crazy. There's so many guys I call it dancing with the disco. It's what Anthony DeSclafani used to do, is just throw sliders over the middle of the play, like 42% usage. And just get through starts by throwing too many sliders, right?
And when it was hanging, he was a home run fest, right? Like that was Descofani's thing. When he was off, it's a home run fest. When he's on, he throws 7 scoreless. That was the thing volatility.
Is, doing it with a cutter makes it even harder for batters to really key in on it over the plate. The only reason Graham Ashcraft can't do it is because he just does not locate at all. But Spence actually locates pretty well. That's the reason why I like him slightly more. He can get through it. I also noticed that Davis Daniels at 110. He's in my 100. And I
total wait and see.
Higher.
I saw you had him there. I know he has the great first start with Davis Daniel. Are you seeing something that could be bankable?
Not really. It's just that he has a good matchup again this week. And it's like, look, the guy just went 8 straight out. I don't care. It was decent enough command. Sure, what the heck, you know?
Okay.
That makes sense in my head. What did Adam Mazur do to you to make him 140?
Last?
I mean, come on. He got like Dallas Keuchel at 140.
I mean, what has Mazur done to get anything but that? Should he even be in the major leagues?
At least he's got he should be better. You know,
we can't be worse.
You want Dallas Keuchel instead? We just know that's the worst.
No, I don't want Dallas Keuchel instead, but he is ranked higher. Mazur is literally my last ranked guy. Keuchel literally surprisingly like 7 ranks higher, which is, again, when you get down there, I got to be honest, I wasn't very meticulous.
I know, I'm just on those numbers. I've literally spent 10 minutes being like 97 versus 98, you know.
I do that stuff. That's why my rankings take forever sometimes. I'm like, right, yeah. Paul, you moved them down three rankings and you spent 42 minutes researching pages to do that three spot rank. Yeah, I mean, more walks than strikeouts. I know we're not, you're not being super serious on Mazur, but should he be above Keuchel? I will agree, yes, because okay, I would not all, take Keuchel should be dead last. Yeah, that is 100% true. I should have just done that from the jump. Keuchel last and then work up from there. So I will accept that point. I will accept
let's
that.
Let's see. Luis Medina isn't the worst. I call him more of a cherry bomb, honestly.
Live arm, but like, you know, but bad team context too.
Yeah, totally get that. And then the last one that I saw, I'm like, I just want to note that Jose Quintana, the last two starts, I think, he's actually started to look like 2023 Jose Quintana, which is pitch separation with the secondaries and his fastballs.
This warms my heart, Nick.
And I think it's the Pirates this week. If it is, I thought it was.
No, it's at Washington.
I don't know why.
It's Washington two times in a row. Sorry.
I don't know why I left off Jose Quintana. I should have kept Jose Quintana on the list. Definitely. He should be, honestly, in like my 80s. And I'm shocked that I didn't. That's complete brain fart for me.
This warms my heart though, because you are trying to talk me into like a boring Toby-esque type of profile here. And this is a rare turn, right? It's usually the other way where I'm trying to espouse the virtues of these type of players to you. I actually had Quintana top 100 coming into the year, you know, didn't get off to a great start. I think I just kind of parked him, you know, the inertia of being down there. And I didn't do a deep dive, right? Whenever we do these rankings, it's hard to deep dive everyone. But he had a very nice June. In fact, from mid-May on, he's been pretty nice over his last 7-8 starts for Quintana, 3.70 ERA. So my 123 is entirely too low. I will fully grant that.
Yeah, it's a case where it's just when he gets into that rhythm of it, then it's like, yeah, okay, this is the Quintana that we know. And
exactly.
I actually kind of I'm starting to see that now. And that's fine. That's fine with me. But that's all. Okay, we're going to go into games now, and we're going to do that after this break.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Requires Gemini device and additional paid subscriptions to watch Netflix and other third-party apps. Terms and restrictions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All right, so Spore, where are we at from last week? How did we do?
All right, it was quite a week. There was plenty of scoring. It didn't start right away, though. The streamers were mega duds for us. You went with Griffin Canning 10% against my Tigers. He only put up 8 points. I went with Hogan Harris, a guy that we've both shown some love to throughout this season already at Arizona. He hit me with a one, so that's double nothing there, so we don't get anything. But from here on in, there's lots of scoring. Sit of the week. 50% or higher at Fantasy Pros, they got to score 10 points or fewer. Javier Assad did get moved off of Milwaukee to the Mets. Didn't matter. Still scored for you. -2 points. That's a dub. Kevin Gausman, 94% versus the Yankees. I wasn't too creative picking a team, someone against the Yankees, but at least it was an ace who's 94%, quote unquote, fantasy ace, 94% rostered, 2 points, boom, that's a hit. So we each cash in there. Star of the week, 50% or under at Fantasy Pros, they need at least 15 points. Reese Olson at the Angels, 29%. Jake Irvin, 45% at the Rays. Both scored 23. That's a double win there. And of course, we should have known the game of the week matchup. Putting Reynaldo Lopez was silly. We did plan for it. We knew that we need to have a backup game because he was slated for Sunday against Paul Skeens. Raylo doesn't get two starts, y'all. Something always happens. This happened to be rain. Hours after we recorded, he got moved off the two-step, which was hilarious. So we had to go to our King Hauk matchup. Unfortunately, that meant big, big loss for me because Hauk got smoked. So you score three, I score two. The update through week 14 is now 24-22 me.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. So, all right. Okay.
I'm trying to come back this week.
We're getting back. So this week for streamers, my pick is Cade Povich, as I mentioned, against Oakland. Mm-hmm. Toby, winning ball club, 7% rostered. Seems like a pretty safe bid there.
Yep.
For you, you have Carson Spires. I like this pick, Spore.
Yeah, I do. I like Carson Spires as well for the Reds going up against my Tigers. Anytime you can face the Tigers and the A's, obviously we're picking on certain teams here. But we're doing it with pitchers that aren't, you know, uber bankable. So there is still some risk here. Haven't seen perfection out of him, but I like some of the things that we have seen from Carson Spears. I am curious how long it can last, though. I love that he's keeping the ball in the park. Things haven't been going as crazy at Cincinnati, but I do worry, right? Will the homers come later? He was suppressing the home runs in the minors as well at a 0.4 homer nine with a 5% homer to fly ball. That is going to be key because he doesn't miss enough bats. He keeps the walks in order. Can he keep the ball in the yard? I think against the Tigers, he's a good bid to do so. So I like him at 8% against them for my streamer.
Nice. Carson Spires, command guy. And if that, I mean, we've seen some games where he's just really good with that. So I love this pick. Sit of the week. I'm taking the easy one. Walker Buehler still ill. Has not looked good all year. Goes against Milwaukee, 56% rostered. Seems like a pretty easy one to be like, yeah, let's just wait and make sure that he's okay. Absolutely. You can also make the case there for even Bobby Miller against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Mitch Keller against the Mets. He's a Vargas rule.
Grimace time, baby. Listen, he's on fire right now. I would go so far as to say he's actually more than a Vargas rule personally. I do like Mitch Keller. He's been cooking. But again, if we're looking for spots here, and I'll reiterate every week that with these sits, if Nick and I have these guys on our team, we're not always 100% abiding by this, but we're trying to give you guys to look, get a second look at that you might normally say, oh, Walker Buehler, that's a huge name, automatic start. Mitch Keller, he's on a huge run, automatic start. Maybe tap the brakes, or if you play DFS, maybe you don't go with these guys. The Mets are taking on everybody right now. They're known for cooking lefties. Don't sleep on the work they've been doing against righties lately. This just might be a little bit of a problem spot for Keller. He's been amazing now going on a pretty long run, but this is one I'd want to avoid if I could, especially in those shallower leagues where you do have deeper rotations.
Nice. So star of the week, 50% or under at Fantasy Pros. We both took guys that were like, really, that's underneath it. I could have done surprised. Mackenzie Gore, apparently. Not
Which is crazy.
That.
I'm surprised you didn't, though. That's your boy.
I mean, no, that's just too easy. I felt like I can't just do that. That's just like abusing the system. So I actually wanted to go with someone who I think would have had a really great start last time, if not for a three-run shot from Juan Soto.
Yeah.
And he's someone who has been through a massive rough patch. And that's Yusei Kikuchi as he goes against the Astros, which seems like, whoa, I know. However, four-seamer is looking good. It's actually one of the more exceptional fan four plus pitches that we've seen all the time. And yes, that is inside the same app that I talked about before. That is essentially whiff percentage or whiff prediction rate. And also he has a slider back finally and no more of those changeups. So I think that Yusei Kikuchi is ready to soar against Houston. I know the matchup isn't ideal, but I don't care. I'm doing it. Taj Bradley. Oh my gosh. He was 45% rostered.
Crazy, the Rangers, right?
The Rangers are just not a bad, good offense and he's got the four-seamer split. This is so good.
That's the thing. We're both going against Texas teams, but you're taking the brunt of it there because Houston's hitting much better than the Rangers. So I don't feel as nervous. I like Bradley everywhere right now. He's an automatic start. Well, not an automatic start for me, but he's in the lineup pretty consistently. There's very few considerations where I'm thinking about sitting Bradley. At Texas is definitely not one of those. He's a strikeout stud, right? And that can cure so many issues. Right now, there is still a home run issue with him. It was a homer-free game last time out, and I'm hoping for another one here, but I love Taj Bradley. I cannot believe he's that lowly rostered, though. Yeah, I know the Rays haven't been good, but even in shallow leagues, how's he only 45%?
I dropped him in one league. I picked him up and dropped him, and I mean, that rotation is still stacked, but oh, man.
Yeah, the only way you were dropping him was because you had other greats.
Well, so it was also like, yeah, you're a cherry bomb, and yeah, here's the Orioles star, and like, right, I don't want to go against the Orioles again, and then he did well against them, and he's just been great since, and cool. Thank you so much. One game matchup, and we have two of them. We've learned from last week, we always
are we're doing backups forever now.
Always. Luis Gil and Cutter Crawford are going against each other. This is Red Sox Yankees Sunday Night Baseball. Mm-hmm. Who is yours?
So, you know, two guys we both really like here. I love Gil. I was all in on him coming into the year, yet I'm going against him. I am taking the disadvantage a little bit on the team context, but I'm going with another guy I loved coming into the year, Cutter Crawford. And he's had some wobbles at times this year, but all in all, been really good. If you drafted Cutter Crawford, it's hard to be too upset about what you've gotten, a 3.59 ERA and a 1.14 whip, if anything, and 95 Ks. If anything, you'd be a little upset about the 3-7 record, but that's out of his control. Oh, that's been a horrendous bullpen. His bullpen support has been so bad. I watched three different starts where they blew a lead for him, but I like him. It'll be tough against the Yankees, but you're getting the guy that's on a little bit worse of a trajectory lately. Even though, in fairness, Crawford wasn't great last time out. So you're getting the guys a little wobblier right now, and I'm getting the tougher matchup. So that's kind of the trade off there, but yeah, I'll take Crawford with it.
Crawford led three home runs. I think it was,
in Cincy too.
Candelario, like fine. Yeah. With Luis Gil, yeah, it's more worrisome, not because of the Orioles start again, but because of that Mets start. So hopefully he's able to adapt from it. If I'm a betting man, I'd probably say it takes two more starts for Luis Gil to get out of it. But it's a better matchup, and it's Luis Gil, and that's going to be so much fun on Sunday Night Baseball. We also have Fried versus Nola as our backup.
That's our backup, yeah.
And you're taking Nola. Oh, okay. I'll take Fried all day, especially without Harper and Schwarber in that lineup, too.
Although I get Noah Acuña every day, like, for my side.
I was wearing that shirt on Friday at the Phillies game. Had a great time. That's awesome. Enjoy Nola.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take Nola there. I'll take the team context a little bit friendlier there, but that's our backup just in case. Especially, we're going to do it for everyone, but especially a Sunday game, we need a backup because that only takes one little thing to move it.
It's a retroactive backup. So, like, if we find out later that it wasn't, then we go apply it to the other one.
Yeah.
But that's going to do it for this edition of the Fireside Chat Spore. This was a really fun one. I love when we're able to do this. And if there's anything else that you've got working on that you want to tell the people about.
Nothing different right now. You know, wanting to get those rankings out, and they're always a grind. I love doing them, but I agonize over them. I want to make so many different shifts. So that's a little bit of a wait. Got those out. Next one will get going for the deadline. But other than that, it's just my normal stuff. With the short week because of the holiday, I've got everything going for my OOTP gig tomorrow. We'll be dark at Fangraphs on Thursday. And I think maybe Friday, but I think Justin and I are still going to do pods. So kind of trying to get a little bit of a break this week. Excited for the holiday. I'm definitely burning the candle at both ends right now, though. It is that the All-Star break is you know, fast approaching, and I'm kind of happy to get a day or two of nothing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, we'll figure out a way to do our trade deadline.
That's right.
I'm going to be out of town in your state.
Oh, you're going to be in Texas. When are you going to Cape Cod?
That week. Not next week, but for the trade deadline.
Yeah, when are you going to Cape Cod, though? Aren't you going?
Oh, I'm going to Cape Cod on Friday.
Okay, I knew that was coming soon.
Yeah, look at you.
So are we doing next week, or are we going to just take the All-Star break?
Oh, no, we're doing it. Guys, we're here for you.
Hey.
We are here for you.
I appreciate that.
We're absolutely going to do that. But anyway, guys, that is going to do for this episode of the Fireside Chat, as of course, oh my gosh, the birds are chirping. Like, how do we do this every single time? On the behalf of Paul Spore, my name is Nick Pollock, and it's always fun hanging with you by the fire.
Thanks for listening to today's Fireside Chat with Paul Spore and Nick Pollock. Follow both Paul and Nick on Twitter at Spore and at PitcherList.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Requires Gemini device and additional paid subscriptions to watch Netflix and other third-party apps. Terms and restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.